Hey friends, you're tuning into Wisdom and Wellness with Wit, a podcast for your emotional, physical, mental, and spiritual well-being, a space to learn and grow, to be encouraged and maybe even challenged just a little bit. Let's journey together and explore what it means to experience the wholeness God has for each of our lives. What's good, everybody? Happy Friday to you. We are here again on a beautiful day. I hope you've been having a good week. And you know what? If you haven't, that is all right. I feel like the beginning of my week started out rough, and then it kind of had an uptick during the week. So you know what? We'll take it. The ebbs and flows that come with life. Today's guest is somebody that I'm just really excited and honored that he was on my podcast. His name is Dr. Dan Ratner, and he has a seminar called Crushing Doubt. And so he is a psychologist in the mind-body field. He navigated his own chronic pain, back pain, for many years, and has found healing in understanding the role that our brain and our nervous system plays in our body. And so I've talked about this a few times and have had a few guests, but he is somebody who just really gives really good language to kind of the thoughts and the emotions and just the different things that go on, you know, in our thought life and our brain. I took his seminar and I really have learned a lot from him, and I think you will too. We talk quite a bit about someone named Dr. Sarno, and I'll have his resources linked as well in the bio of this podcast, but he is kind of like the godfather, if you will, of coining the term tension myositis syndrome. It can also be called tension myoneural syndrome, the mind-body syndrome. There's a lot of different verbiage going around now, but he's kind of the person that I think put maybe the clearest language as well as the science behind kind of what's going on in the body and the brain. And a lot of people who had debilitating back pain found a lot of healing in simply understanding the role that the brain and the nervous system plays in the body. And so Dr. Dan Ratner is somebody who also went through chronic back pain and found a lot of healing, and now treats and just has a big role in this field for now people under him finding a lot of freedom from their pain as well. So I hope you find a lot of value from this conversation, as I did. And I also want to just reiterate quickly that as a follower of Jesus, you know, I'm really passionate about learning how he created our brains and our bodies to not only function, but thrive. And I've said it before, but I'm going to say it every time, that God makes no mistakes with these bodies that he's made and that he's placed in our care to steward. And so I find there to be no conflict when discussing neuroscience and psychology of pain in regards to my faith as a believer in Jesus. It has only amplified this desire to exegete scripture when we really talk about our physical bodies and what it means to function with the mind of Christ. At times like today's interview, I have guests who don't hold those same biblical convictions, but I absolutely believe they have a lot to contribute to this topic when it comes to the science and psychology behind the mechanistic process that is our wonderful brain and nervous system. So let's get into it. Disclaimer: this podcast episode is for educational and informational purposes only. This is not medical advice. I am not a medical doctor, psychiatrist, or therapist, nor am I trying to be. The information presented is not intended to be a substitute for health and medical care that can be provided by your own physician, medical doctor, or mental health provider, nor is it intended to be used to diagnose or treat any condition. Always seek medical counsel relating to your specific health needs with any questions or concerns you may have, especially before starting any treatment plan, fitness regimen, adding supplements, changing or quitting medication, or making any lifestyle, mental health, or dietary changes. Any suggestion or recommendation mentioned on this podcast is to be taken at your own risk. All right. Well, thank you, Dan, for being willing to come on this podcast. I'm so excited to get to talk to you a little bit. So I'm very honored. Thank you.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here.
Yes, I'm excited because I took your seminar 5 or 6 months ago, maybe longer than that.
And I have found a lot of just tremendous help and some healing in my own journey. And I took your seminar because I'd found a lot of improvement in some certain areas when it came to physical symptoms, but like still haven't quite, you know, found kind of complete symptom reduction. And so it was just a really good, yeah, we'll get into it. It was just a really good course just to learn all about how our minds work. And I think also how a lot of us are so much more similar than we think. Like hearing you say things and hearing other people say what they're going through, I'm like, I was literally just writing down everything everybody said. I was like, yeah, I feel that too. Oh, that's how I feel too. So,
it's part of the nice group experience there.
Yeah.
You know, the seminars are great because you do get that group perspective where, wow, we really are going through a lot of the same things, but then you also get the kind of broad range information that I try to bring to people. So I was very pleased to have you there, and I'm very excited that it seems like it's moved the needle some.
Yeah, absolutely. Can you just go ahead and kind of just give an introduction of who you are and how you found your way into this mind-body work?
Sure. I'm Dr. Dan Ratner. I am a psychologist, and I knew about the idea of psychosomatic issues, but in truth, I thought of that term as meaning in your head. Now I understand it's not in your head, it's from your head and very real in the body, how I think about it. But the way that I found myself into this world was through the lovely experience of 8 years of chronic everyday back pain with no answers. I went through it's kind of a pretty typical story in a lot of ways in that I went to see doctors, I went to see physical therapists, I went to see acupuncturists, I went to see a chiropractor. I just couldn't get answers. And even worse, I felt like nobody was really all that concerned that they didn't have answers for me. That was a big eye opener for me.
Yeah.
And I just kind of did my best with things, and I got no real help until I got to the chiropractor. He's a great chiropractor. His name is Dr. Einhorn. And he really dug in, and he tried his best, and he did help me a lot. And I think that just his caring about me and feeling that there was somebody on the case brought down fear enough that the symptoms did get better to about 50%.
Yeah. Okay.
But I still wasn't getting answers. And then he happened to mention Sarno, and he didn't even know that much about Sarno. In fact, he was saying, you know, read his first book, but I don't know. He says a lot of stuff that's really out there in his later books, which I have found not out there at all, actually.
Right.
So I read Sarno, and it just made more sense to me than anything ever before. And I worked at it for a couple months, and the back pain really did start to change. I couldn't believe it. It felt like a miracle.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. And then so you kind of just did your own self-assessment on yourself. You figured it out, and then you were like, I'm going to teach other people how to do this.
Yeah, once it happened, it was such a miracle that I was like, I can't not do this. I mean, I was excited to do it anyway, and it fit with my interests. But I also just felt like if I had known about this, I would have been saved from 8 years of this.
Right.
And no one in my life knew about it. So I was like, it must be talked about.
Yeah. Which is so powerful. It's like I think we all know this, but some of our deepest pain, I feel like, ends up being like our greatest attribution in life to kind of help and heal others, which I feel like most people in the mind-body space, like everybody has their own story of, you know, dealing with chronic pain and finding healing.
Yeah, well, the people who have gone through it and are on the other side of their, you know, their biggest symptoms, they do feel like it changed their life more than anything. That changed my life more than anything. But the people who are still going through it, they don't know what's coming. They don't know that it's going to be that.
Right. Yeah. So, and you're somebody who can help a lot of us find ways to get to the end of, not the end, but, you know, find healing in that journey. So you have a podcast and your coaching, what would you call it? Your mentorship and coaching and seminars is called Crushing Doubt. And
that's
so
right.
Clearly, you have made a correlation to how important understanding doubt, and I know that's like essentially a lot of what you talk about. And we talked a lot about it in your seminar, which was super helpful. How have you found that doubt is one of just like the greatest components or maybe keys to kind of assessing a mind-body issue?
Well, it's really interesting because when I read Sarno, one of the things that I came away with, it took me some time to sort this out because I had to see what was out in the mind-body world.
Yeah.
I found that there are a lot of people who have taken Sarno's information. They believe in his information and they want to spread his information. But what a lot of them have forgotten to do is to spread his way. Meaning, the reason I got better from Sarno wasn't just his information. It was also his certainty. And so I knew, I mean, he laid it out there. He said, he must accept the diagnosis fully.
Yeah.
And I feel like everyone didn't hear that second half of the message as fully as I would want them to. So that's, it's funny because that's kind of how I think about it now. But in terms of going through it, what I found is that I tried to address it through emotional means. And I kept thinking, but I'm really aware. I've had, you know, well over a decade of therapy. I think it was like 15 years of therapy at that point or something like that. And I'm very aware. So what am I missing? And there was this really crucial event for me where I went to see Eric Sherman. I don't know if you know Eric. He's a great guy. And he did some training with Sarno under Arlene Feinblatt with Fran Anderson. And I thought, okay, this guy's going to have some answers for me. And I thought I was going to go to see him like to be a, like a mind body technician, a back technician, just help me with this.
Okay.
But he really was just, I don't want to say just, that makes it sound dismissive, but I think that he was a mind body informed therapist.
Okay.
What I was looking for was a therapy informed mind body expert. I had already had the therapy. I wanted somebody help me take away these symptoms now.
Yeah.
So I went to him and he said he couldn't really see me because I was in another therapy and that was going to conflict. And I was like, well, now where am I going to go? But I said to him, do you mind if I ask you a couple questions? So I had only one session with Eric and I swear I asked him like 200 questions. I had so many questions.
That's awesome.
And what it made me realize is as he answered them and my doubt started shrinking, like that to me is like the inspiration of crushing doubt because by getting those 200 or so questions more answered and them all making sense, I felt more certain. My fear came down. I started to get better. So it was such a key component and I could just see it for myself that I came to understand it's not just emotions. It's also what we're thinking and the doubts we have.
Ah, that is really powerful because I think a lot of us definitely start in the, which is great in the therapy sector. But then it's like, I've literally uncovered everything I think I can uncover. Where do I go from here? Like, do I just have to keep reliving, you know, trauma? Do I have to, is there more repressed stuff I just haven't dug into enough? So yeah, that's a good point you make. What was it about for you, like you said, the certainty, but was there something specific like that you read in Sarno where you were like, oh, that's, this is me for sure. Like this is going to do it.
It's funny that the number one thing that got me to think Sarno definitely knows what he's talking about. And this is right. Was the concept of goodism. Yeah. When he described the personality that tends to have mind body issues.
Yeah.
And it was like, I've never felt so well described in any book ever.
For sure.
I was just like, this guy knows what he's talking about.
Okay. That makes sense. Can you describe a little bit to us some of the main characteristics? And do you believe, like, do you agree with him? Like certain personalities tend to maybe have symptoms more easily than others?
Well, let me start there. I 100% agree with him. It's not the case that every single person who has symptoms is that goodist type. And by goodism, we're talking about people pleasing, very focused on doing a good job. It can be perfectionistic. It can be very self-critical. But usually when people talk about what Sarno called goodists, they're talking about like the most pleasant people in their lives.
Right.
Because they just are like, They're entertaining. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's funny because I'm talking about myself, which is like sounds like I'm bragging.
No, but I get you.
there's a major downside for those mm-hmm. people. And so you can have chronic pain and other issues without the full, like, goodest perspective. But mm-hmm. I will say the amount of people that I've met who have these symptoms that end up being goodists mm-hmm. very clearly right from the start.
Yeah.
I'd say it's at least 80%. It's wow. a huge factor.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And is that a lot of it because of, like, the people pleasing? I think I've been told too, some of, like, the people pleasing imposter stuff is that, like, I'm never able to feel safe in, like, my brain or my nervous system or my body because I'm always trying to navigate some, you know, someone else's experience or whatever. Like, I want to make sure they're happy. And so therefore I'm, you know, not really concerned about my own.
Yeah, exactly. I think that it makes us feel in danger all the time because, you know, I didn't want anyone to be mad at me at any time.
Right.
And, oof, you know, we live in a world where people are going to get mad at us, not only frequently, but they're going to get mad at us about ridiculous things that have nothing to do with us a lot of the time.
Right.
And I would take it so seriously that and figure, okay, I just need to do a better job. Mm-hmm. So we're putting a lot of pressure on ourselves and it really feels dangerous. And then there's the other side of the coin. If we decide not to be around people, we can feel lonely and isolated and like, and that doesn't feel safe either. So we're never safe.
Right. Yeah. Ugh. Yeah. That is very true. I think my sickest moments, I was like, I don't want to have to be around people because I don't want to have to act like I'm okay. Or it's too much energy. So yeah, being by myself is a lot safer. Obviously I didn't really make that connection at the time. I just thought I'm so tired and I don't have energy. So I'm gonna be by myself, but definitely learning that was like totally a coping mechanism, if you will, to just try and kind of regulate myself, which.
Yeah. I mean, it's so common in seeing people with these issues. And what I just wanted to say, one of the things that I've come to see is people don't have to stop being good. They don't have to stop having those qualities.
Mm-hmm.
They just need to alter how they channel them. Because if we're channeling them all the time with all people, it's way too much. But if we can channel them with the right people at the right times, be more understanding to ourselves when we don't feel that way, then it can relax.
That's good. So you're saying emotions, are you making a correlation that doubt is an emotion or is not an emotion?
Well, that's interesting. I think of doubt, it can be emotional and it can be not emotional. I think I call fear the emotional form of doubt.
Okay.
So that is, it's doubt in emotional form. But then there's doubt of thought, which is the large majority of doubt. Mm-hmm. You can just be confused. Like, I don't know what's happening.
Right.
Or you can just lack certainty. Or even just if you have questions, if you're like, I'm pretty certain about this, but I still don't quite understand that. I'll give you an example.
Mm-hmm.
When I started reading Sarno, even before he got to the personality stuff, the first thing that jumped out at me is this guy's talking about science.
Yeah.
So that was very important to me because I felt like, I'm reading a book on back pain. Like I've lost my mind.
Right.
I needed somebody to tell me why this really made sense. And very quickly, he showed why it was. Mm-hmm. So that was incredibly helpful. And I started kind of looking into it more and reading what he was saying. And, you know, I found that he was laying out all of the proof, which was bringing down my fear. So, you know, we're bringing down doubt. But I did have certain questions that emerged, even with Sarno. I love him. He saved my life. I'm not saying it critically of him whatsoever.
Yeah.
It's hard to have answered everything. And in a way, I found that either he answered it directly or he answered it indirectly. And it's the indirect parts that I've pulled out into what I do. Like with the doubt work being even more important than I felt it was represented there.
Yeah.
But another example was he talked about mild oxygen deprivation to the muscles as the cause for my back pain symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even think he's necessarily wrong about that. But what didn't add up is I was like, how does this explain everything? Like,
right.
I did not understand the physiological mechanism. Mm-hmm. Well, there's a part in what he writes in The Divided Mind about Candace Pert and molecules of emotion. Did you ever read this?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yes.
That to me was like, ah, there's my answer. I didn't have that question anymore after I read Candace Pert. I understood. Okay.
Yeah.
Peptides are the way that the brain controls every cell in your body in every single way. And what that meant is oxygen deprivation was one of thousands of ways that your body can be controlled by the mind. Now it made sense. Doubt came down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. That is interesting. And he has, there's a lot of people who, some people have experienced the Sarno book cure. Do you have any thoughts on that? I think because I've heard that and it made me really mad.
I know.
Being honest and jealous.
Yep. Yeah, I have lots of thoughts about it. And I think you'll be pleased with them because it's in line with what you're saying.
Yeah.
There's going to be all kinds of variety that people experience with this. When they read Sarno, the idea of a book cure is they read Sarno, their symptoms got better very quickly, and they never looked back.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, I think, what we would say would be a book cure, right?
Right.
Well, to me, the vast majority of people don't actually work that way, even when they do. What I mean by that is when they get a book cure, they usually will have some kind of new symptom pop up later in their life. And they'll have to rework this again. I don't mean that as bad. You know, I don't mean it as bad news for people who got book cures.
Right.
But I'm just, maybe it'll feel good to someone like you to know, actually, everybody's got to work this through pretty deeply.
Yeah.
It happens very frequently. Book cure people saying it was working and it can work for like 20 years.
Yeah. Wow.
And then they'll say, but now this one doesn't give in. So that's the way I look at the role of doubt is doubt explains what happens when the information isn't enough. When that experience of getting the information, even when you accept the information, isn't enough because you have doubts. You have things that are lingering and they need to be answered.
Right.
To me, that's the riddle of why do some people have book cures and others don't, or why are some lingering in these symptoms?
Yeah.
I was like half and half. I would say that I got a book cure of sorts. It took like 2 months, maybe. I don't know if that's a book cure in the way that they talk about it.
Yeah.
But I still have, I had to grapple with huge amounts of mind-body symptoms for like a long time afterwards anyway.
Yeah.
I still have mind-body symptoms every day. I can just control them so well.
Right.
That I just think of it as the human condition, which I think it is.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and that's a good segue. So I like your method because it's very different from a lot of, everybody in the mind-body field kind of has the way that has been helpful for them. So you have a three columns approach, which I found really helpful. Can you give kind of a brief description of it? And then we'll do a little bit. We don't have to do a ton, but we'll just do a little bit because I thought it'd be cool for people to. Also, I had a crazy emotional morning. So I was like, I don't know if this was a good idea because I don't need to be crying.
listen, if you need to, I'm here.
I know, right? Yeah.
I mean, it's your podcast. So you will get to decide in large measure. But I do think the way I think about all of these things, I'll get to the columns in a second. But the way I think of all of these things is you shouldn't have to hide anything about who you are. I mean, I think that's we combat mind body issues, or at least we learn from mind body issues. The main lesson, I think, is be fully yourself. So I say go for it.
But yeah, that's good.
Let me talk about the columns a little bit.
Yeah.
So the columns to me, first of all, the name, the columns, it's derived from the fact that when I meet with people in these shorter term consultations I was doing at the time, I would have people take out a piece of paper and divide it into actual columns.
Okay.
Because there are three types of experience that I discovered over time as I studied this that tell us about how mind-body symptoms operate. The emotions column is the one that is by far the most similar to what Dr. Sarno says. Yeah. It's unconscious emotions that we need to distract ourselves from that lead to these physical symptoms that are the distraction. If we discover what the emotion is, we get that awareness, that symptom goes down. Now, speaking of book cures, A lot of people get book cures because there was an emotions column correlate, and it was taken away. That function's gone, and it was cured. I'll put in quotes.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
But there are two other columns.
Yeah.
So for the people who don't get that, you can bounce over to the other columns and find out other reasons these symptoms are there.
Mm-hmm.
I also get a little more specific in the emotions column about how to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
And part of that's that Dr. Sarno was a medical doctor. He worked with Arlene Feinblatt, who Arlene's wonderful. I don't know if you've ever gotten to talk to her. She's amazing.
Oh.
But I did get to talk to Dr. Sarno once for did 2 minutes. It was after he retired. And I'm kind of thrilled that I got to.
That's awesome.
It was quite a loss when we lost him. But
yeah,
jumping back to these columns and how to think about things.
Yeah.
I took that little kernel from Sarno saying you have to be sure about the diagnosis and my experience with Eric Sherman. And I realized, no, you got to be sure about everything, which I understand that that's a tall order in a way.
Right.
Doesn't end up being as tall an order as you think. You just have to get the questions articulated and answered to your satisfaction. So that's what the doubt column is. The emotions column is where we collect the main emotional themes. This is where I get a little more directive than Sarno is, because he's a doctor and I was a psychologist. Maybe that's the difference.
Yeah, for
I don't know.
Right.
I just discovered things and I understood certain things intuitively. But the doubt column is where you I say you observe, articulate, and counter the doubt. So to observe it is just to recognize that you even have a doubt. So a lot of times people aren't realizing they're having doubts, and that's one of the reasons it gets perpetuated.
Totally.
I just realized that I hadn't explained that the emotions column usually leads to that. That's the onset and uptick in symptoms. So that's an important distinction, because sometimes people say, well, okay, I'm thinking emotionally, but I've had this for like 5 years. I'm not feeling that the same way. And you're not. But your thought process needs to be articulated in the doubt column so that you can see, how am I doubting? If you're going to counter a doubt, you need to know how you're doubting.
Yeah.
So the doubt column is used to help people to counter those symptoms that are really hanging on and they're not moving much. They seem completely chronic. And I have this distinction that I make, which I'm sure you will remember.
It's my favorite. I've talked about it on a different episode. Yes. The acutely consistent.
Yeah. So it's a very important distinction, because chronic just means unbroken in time, but it doesn't describe why it's unbroken in time. So it can be chronic because there is a major problem with the body and therefore that structure is not going to change and it would go on and on. That's how we tend to think about chronic conditions. Or it can be what I'm talking about, where your thinking is always the same.
Right.
It's just consistent thinking.
Mm-hmm.
If we change that thinking, it's no longer consistent thinking, and a seemingly chronic condition can break up.
Yeah.
So that to me, the doubt column is the first part that I found to be an expansion of what Dr. Sarno was saying in a way that could really help. And these columns help you to organize the thinking, because you've got the emotions column for acute symptoms and for understanding your emotional life as it applies to these things. You got the doubt column as it applies to your thinking and as it applies to seemingly chronic conditions.
Yeah.
Then there's the power column. And the power column I discovered in a different way. When I brought down my doubt after the Eric Sherman session and I started to get better and I started working with people, I started to notice a correlation. And this is where kind of goodism fits in. I took a kernel of what Sarno was saying and explored that with myself and my experience to try to understand what was happening. And basically, I found that a lot of goodists, but not just goodists, but just people in their relationships with themselves, were getting kind of stuck on a plateau. They couldn't move past a certain point.
Yeah.
So you got your acute symptoms that you address with emotions column. You've got your supposedly chronic ones. I never say actually just chronic. It's always supposedly. With the doubt column. But if you've got your doubt down and you know about your emotions as they relate to these symptoms, and you're still getting stuck at a certain level, That's what I call a plateau. And that usually relates to this column that I call power, which is about your relationship with yourself. The way that I discovered the power column was that I read Sarno. I started reducing my doubt. I saw Eric Sherman. That helped tremendously. Mm-hmm. When I got better from these symptoms, I felt more powerful than I had ever felt in my whole life.
Yeah.
It was a great feeling. Mm-hmm. But I also was like, wait a minute. If I feel this great about it, doesn't that mean something? Like, couldn't we use this?
Yeah. Huh.
So what I found is you can actually, instead of waiting to feel powerful just because your symptoms resolve, we could start working on feeling powerful in our own lives.
Mm-hmm.
And that brings down doubt all by itself. That helps us feel more certain about our emotional lives and able to recognize it. It may help us address our emotional lives better. So the power column gives you ways to deal with the other two columns in a way that builds up your good relationship with yourself, your sense of safety in the world, speaking back to what we were talking about before.
Yeah.
And what I found is it was very, very helpful in breaking through plateaus.
Yeah, that one has definitely, and I feel like you said it was common. The power column has been like the hardest for me, I think. Maybe because it is like, I don't know, maybe it's nice to stay stuck in like what you're saying, the common thought. So then to like break that thought with something different, you're like, yeah, I'll get to that later. I keep putting the power column off for a long time.
Well, let me reassure you something. Hopefully this will be helpful reassurance. First of all, the power column is definitely the concept in my columns that people find the hardest.
Yeah.
It has the least overall clarity, but there's a reason for that. In its functionality. Now, let me back up for a second. Each column represents a function of symptoms. The function of symptoms in the emotions column is the distraction. The symptoms are there to distract from the emotion. The function in the doubt column is to keep its function. It wants to just stay where it is.
Right.
And here is why people put off the power column, aside from the fact that it's a little less clear to describe. I've gotten much better at describing it, so hopefully I'll be helpful to you here.
Yeah.
But the power column is where we receive the communication that the symptoms need to give. What are they telling us about our life?
That's good.
I think that looking at it in that simplistic a light, which is really all it is, is going to help you utilize that column more. That's all you need to do. That's receive really the communication. I don't say all like it's easy, but at least it's not so varied.
Right. Yeah, that is very interesting. I like that. Kind of like meeting a need that you haven't quite met yet.
That's right. And so the function of a power column symptom is, it's basically saying to you, if it's talking to you, Whitney, I'm not going away until you hear me. You need something and you're not getting it for you. So I'm going to make sure your body gives you the message that you need this.
That's good. Do you find, because I feel like I said it earlier, we're like, do you find that a lot of us tend to like just struggle with kind of similar themes? Not to like minimize every individual's experience, but sometimes I think I get on my own little corner of like, I must be so special is not the right word, but I must be so special that I'm this dysfunctional or so, you know what I mean? Like, I think we get so, because we're only, you know, in our brain, it's like, I must be the only one who knows how this feels. And it, because I just feel like, you know, from doing this, I'm like, I think a lot of us feel similar things and maybe we just dress it up a little bit differently with different verbiage or something.
I think in large measure I can agree with that. I mean, I'll put it back to you in a certain way and you can tell me if this is representing what it is that you're saying. But when I go through the emotions column and I help people go through their different themes, there's like a checklist I have of basic ideas. You know, it's like validity, self-esteem, loss, fear. You know, it's all the big ticket items are the broad pieces that I use to build those themes. The specific themes can have tremendous variation. But in a way, I think the overall themes are very, very relatable between each other.
Yeah, I think, I don't know, maybe it's just for my own brain to know, like, I'm not alone in the way that I necessarily think and feel. Like, I think there's a lot more people who are similar to me.
I think usually that's a great comfort to people. Mm-hmm. And it's another reason I like the columns is they, mm-hmm. they basically are just describing what is human experience. Mm-hmm. Everybody has columns. It's just never been described that way.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Can you go into a little bit as well the levels of doubt? I found that very, very interesting.
Sure. So all of these things came out of my just looking at it and needing to get out of my own symptoms. So what I noticed is even when I got past what I call level one doubt, which is just the doubt as to whether my symptoms were mind body or not.
So that's like base level kind of for everybody.
Yes. I think most people who are reading Sarno are trying to address that first and foremost.
Right.
But what I found is, as with a lot of things in the work, it wasn't quite enough at certain moments, and I had to figure out why not. So as I looked at it, I found that there are two other levels of doubt that you can have. You can be certain you have a mind-body issue for sure, have no doubt whatsoever about it, but still think, yeah, but this one symptom is harder to tackle than another. So that's what I call level two doubt.
Yeah.
It's where you think your symptom, your particular symptom, and the reason you're not getting better is because that symptom's harder. I'm going to give you an example that is very common. People who have migraines, it's very, very common for them to have level two doubt. Because migraines are so awful and they're so in your head. I don't mean to diminish other symptoms, but they're so bad that. And meanwhile, people don't have a lot of experience with the idea that you could make a migraine go away.
Right.
They usually think I'm stuck with this for like a day or two or something like that. So the messaging we've received about it from even from ourselves, but also in society.
Yeah.
We don't know that you can get better from that. So that's level two doubt.
Yeah. Okay.
But then as I explored it and I was like, okay, well, I'm certain I have mind body stuff and I'm certain it all works the same. There's no symptom that's going to be harder than another. Cause I had the assumption that my back pain was going to be harder to resolve than other symptoms because I had had it for 8 years.
Right. Yeah.
It turned out not to be true. So that helped me break down level two doubt as well as level one doubt. But level three doubt is when we have doubts about ourselves, our own ability to get better from the work because of something with us.
Yeah.
Here's a good example. There's some people who come to me and they are very fear-based people in general. I don't mean that critically, just descriptively. And they know themselves. So they look and they say, you're telling me I have to master my fear, but I'm so afraid. I'm never going to be able to do it. That's a doubt right there. So I have to work with all three levels of doubt. And I find that separating those out so that you can see them can be very helpful because if it's all just nebulous, just doubt.
Yeah.
We're not pinpointing it enough. It's a form of articulation, recognizing those levels.
Right. Yeah, that's good. That is good. Because, yeah, I think that was what was shocking to me was like realizing, yeah, like what you're saying, I had a lot of fears and different things. And I had never made that correlation that it was just a form of doubt, which was just very powerful in my head. Because you're like, well, if you doubt something, you can, like you're saying, you can find certainty to decrease that doubt. Of course. Easier said than done. Not easier said than done, but...
well, it is easier said than done a lot of the time. I mean, although the corollary is also true. Sometimes it's not as hard as you think. And ultimately, I think it comes down to what are your actual questions and what answers would you need? I sometimes say to people, what would you need to know to make this doubt go to zero?
Right. Yeah, right. No, that's good. Okay, so what do you think would be most helpful for people to hear? My levels of doubt or the emotions column? Where do you think people get stuck the most?
Well, I think people get stuck in different areas, but I think typically when it comes to me, they're usually more well-versed in what is known as the emotions column because they get a lot of that work.
Right.
Through Sarno, through a lot of the mind-body people.
Yeah.
But when they're not getting answers there, I call this beating your head against the emotional brick wall. Mm-hmm. You're just like, I'll just keep looking.
Right.
And they're just, usually these people know all about themselves. There's not a place to look really. Mm-hmm. What they need is a new understanding. And that mm-hmm. will come in the doubt column. But the doubt column is how you understand how your mind is thinking about the symptoms. The power column is how you understand how your mind is thinking about you.
Yeah. You like how I didn't even offer the power column?
I know. I noticed. Whitney was like, I'm not touching the power column with a 10-foot pole.
The goodest in me is trying to be most helpful to others.
Right. And your power column is basically saying, stay away. I know. I don't think we can go here yet.
I know. I mean, so we could do the power column.
Listen, it's up to you. I think it would pose certain challenges. I think you personally, based on where you're at, would probably mm-hmm. get the most out of going to the power column because mm-hmm. you've experienced the other things.
All right.
I think your viewers would get a lot out of the doubt column. We could also right. split time a little bit. You know, we could dip into
okay.
both.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So for me, I was kind of like you. So I've had a lot of different body pain, fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue, a lot of that stuff. For me, that stuff was easy to see how I could have symptom reduction. For me, it's been the vocal pain that is kind of the clincher that's still holding on. So for me, the level one, that the doubt that the symptom is mind body, I've been told that I sing too hard or incorrectly. So that could be a reason for pain. I said migraines could be from sugar because they happen right away after I eat sugar. Abdominal pain from like hormonal issues, because I've been told I have a lot of things that have been out of whack hormonally. So those are like my level one doubts of like, I've been given different diagnoses of, yeah, it makes sense why you would feel this way.
Okay. I do want to note just to help you with that
yeah.
there is some level two doubt in some of those because you're saying these symptoms are going to be different than the others.
Right.
And they've, I understand they actually have acted differently. So
yeah.
I get why you'd have it, but just important to note that.
Mm-hmm.
There could even be some level three doubt, at least with the vocal cords, where you're thinking how I sing, how I am, mm-hmm. how I need to express myself is like not okay in some way. Mm-hmm. Do you know that I sing? Have we talked about
that? No, we haven't.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I sing and write my own songs, and I did actually... a couple months back, I think it's been about 4 or 5 months, I felt I had strained my vocal cords and I was so worried about it. And I was like, oh my God, I have to like give vocal rest and all kinds of things.
Right.
So I can very much relate. And we'll go through how I got through that and how I think about that. Because here's the thing. I would say the overarching way that I could help you in the doubt column right now is to recognize you've got a lot of voices telling you lots of things.
Yeah.
And you don't yet feel certain within yourself where things stand on certain issues. You do mm-hmm. with some, mm-hmm. and those symptoms have resolved, the ones you're certain about.
Yeah.
But the ones where you're not haven't resolved, which is exact proof of the doubt column. It's exactly what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
What I'd like to do is go through those three symptoms you mentioned.
Yeah.
And the worries you have about them, or I don't know if worries is the right word, but there's mm-hmm. some doubt in there.
Mm-hmm.
And let's find out, what do you think you would need to combat it? Even if we don't actually get the right counter to it yet,
we can
articulate it. We can get it exposed as, well, what do you need answered here?
Hmm.
So
okay.
As an example,
yeah,
with the vocal issue, you have a question. Do I sing wrong? I'll put in quotes.
Mm-hmm.
Do I have to change how I sing? Did I damage... I mean, I imagine you have all these questions.
Yeah.
And I think we need an answer to that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we can even get it as we explore it. But
mm-hmm.
does it sound like I'm articulating the right doubts about that?
Yeah, absolutely. Because I think most, you know, the last 4, 5, 6 years have been, you know, going to the best ENT or like voice specialist and all that stuff, you know, to answer my question of, is it structural? And I've never gotten a structural diagnosis. There's no nodes or like, you know, things that normally a singer would have that would cause pain.
Right. Mm-hmm. So that could help some people to get that level one doubt down and say, mm-hmm. okay, I'm good with this, but mm-hmm. something's not quite sitting right for you to be able to settle in about that.
Right.
I had to go through the exact same thing. I had to sort out, you know what? I did not damage my voice. This is fear that is actually literally changing my voice. My voice wasn't as strong.
Yeah.
It just was like hard to fathom that it was mind body, I guess you could say,
right,
for most people.
Right.
My belief in mind body is so strong that I was like, no, this is almost certainly mind body, but I still had doubts.
Yeah.
Maybe. You know, it had happened after I yelled once, and then I was like, and it felt strained for like a day or two. That wasn't that surprising. But then it kept going, and I was like, well, and then I started thinking, did I strain myself? Are vocal cords different when you're a bit older? Like, I started just going into all kind, and see how am I articulating the doubts?
Mm-hmm.
I needed to get them answered for myself.
Yeah.
I have gotten them answered for myself, and now I know there's nothing wrong with the way that I sing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have to worry about it. I'm not going to strain my voice in the way that I do it with my singing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if I scream all the time, yeah, that will not be good for it. But
right.
So what is it? What would it take for you to feel more settled about that symptom? What would I have to say to you if I could say anything?
Mm-hmm.
What would it be that would help you feel like, okay, I'm totally resolved about that? Even in theory, it doesn't have to be
right.
Like if there was a study that said, guess what, Whitney, vocal cords are indestructible. They never get damaged.
Hmm.
Like, would that resolve it?
That would definitely help a lot. Yeah. I think sometimes I've wondered if it's like my cords or if it's like my actual like esophagus. Like I've kind of like, I've done the whole, like, maybe it's not my vocal cords. Maybe it's literally like, you know, acid reflux, you know, really bad acid reflux, like stuff like that.
Right.
So yeah, probably having to hear like, there's no possible way the way you sing could hurt your cords. And also, you know, we've scoped you every which way possible and there's nothing there.
So I'm going to try out a couple of things as we, and this is what I do with my own doubt. So I'm just showing you how it works and hopefully it'll help you.
Yeah.
One of the things that I kind of remind myself of is that mind-body symptoms are much stronger than people realize.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe you aren't yet fully on board with the fact that your mind-body experience could actually do whatever it's doing with the vocal cords. Do you believe that it could?
I do. Yeah. Because I notice when it hurts more and when it doesn't. Like if I don't have a session or a gig or something, I don't really notice pain throughout the day.
Okay. So to me, that's part of the way. We've gotten you part of the way there.
Mm-hmm.
When I say we, you already did it before me. I'm not trying to take credit for it. But you've done that work to get part of the way there.
Yeah.
Now the question is, what is holding you back? And this is where I'm trying to articulate it out. What is holding you back from believing completely, fully, that if that's true, and it kind of comes and goes with that stuff, that this vocal cord stuff is 100% mind-body and has absolutely nothing to do with pure physicality. You know, your body could respond to a mind-body process, and it never will. I mean, unless you scream, that kind
of thing. I think because I've experienced improvement in the other areas. So I'm like, well, if this was that, I probably would have already noticed a shift.
Okay. Now this is kind of funny, I have to say. You're hitting a plateau. This is a power column issue right here. All
right. Fine.
I'm sorry, Whitney. But think about it. Why would it not be? I mean,
yeah.
Your vocal cords, your singing, I know because I'm a singer, like that's as close to the direct expression of who I am as anything I have.
Right.
You're for a singer, you know this.
Right.
And so the fact that you've shied away from, I hope that's not feeling exposing. No.
It is kind of
amusing.
No, it makes sense.
I mean, hopefully it's very helpful in addition to being potentially amusing. It's also really hard.
Yeah.
You know, like facing things in the power column is much harder than facing things everywhere else.
Right.
There's a reason we avoid it.
Right.
There's a reason it's hard to I mean, it's the power column is where we face what really happened to us. I have this thing in the power column called the core narrative, which you know about, at least in theory.
Yeah.
It is the story of your suffering self.
Mm-hmm.
Well, your voice has been, I think, I would guess, a source of strength for you, expressing who you are. It's like your own thing. It's so uniquely yours.
Yeah. It's like my identity has been in my voice.
Right. So your fear around those symptoms is going to be much higher because it's more important to you.
For sure. Yeah.
So that shows you why your doubt is higher in that symptom. And that shows you why you haven't gotten fully better from that one where you have from others.
Totally. And I've even told people, like, if I were like bedridden and I had like all over body pain, but my voice was fine and I could like use a microphone, I'd be good.
Yeah, right. It's that important. Well, that's why it's so much more high stakes. Does that answer the question for you then, why this symptom has not gotten as much better as the others?
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, it definitely makes sense. For sure.
Okay, but I'm all hesitant answers I never accept.
You don't accept hesitant answers.
I don't want to say I don't accept them like you need to do better. I'm saying I can do better by you than leaving it there. So what's missing? There is some hesitance still.
There is some hesitancy still. I guess I see the voice as maybe more, what's the word? Fragile, maybe. I'm like, you know, like it is more fragile than like my, you know, I had chronic migraines and stuff too. And so, yeah.
Okay. Why do you think of it as more fragile? That's not an uncommon thought. I felt the same way when I was in it.
Yeah.
But why? We're trying to get this articulated.
Yeah. Probably because I've known so many singers who have had damage to their voices. So I'm like, well, yeah, we must all be doing something wrong, or like not warming up properly or warming down. Like, you know, I haven't always had the best like vocal care when it came to that. So I was like, okay, I probably overused it and, you know, treated it poorly.
So when people hurt their vocal cords or whatever, what do you, is it correlated to nodules and things that are very clearly seen by doctors and that sort of thing?
Yeah, probably that. Probably like singing while sick. I know a lot of friends who have had a lot of damage because they did a lot of that. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, just poor vocal habits.
Okay, I have a question for you. I don't know where this is going yet, but do you know for sure that they had actual damage, or were they saying, and I'm not saying nobody has damage, because you can. It tends to be pretty extreme, though. Like, people who are in like a heavy metal band who are constantly screaming and they get nodules.
Right.
That's legitimate, yes. Straight from physicality.
Mm-hmm.
But and then I suppose people who really, really strain on certain things, I suppose they could. But the fact is, like, I find if you're listening to your own voice and you don't push it like super, super far, I don't think you can injure it much.
Right.
Like, there are just notes I can't hit. And my vocal cords are just like, that's not happening, buddy.
Right. Good try. Yeah.
I really, really pushed it, you can damage it. But it's so, I just want to help you consider maybe it has to be so extreme for that to even happen. And maybe some of these people who are saying they're injured actually have a mind-body thing.
Yeah. No, that's true. I mean, the only things I've like known people have been diagnosed with are like nodules.
Yeah, well, those things for sure. Then the question is, well, how have they, because a nodule is a nodule, you know.
Right.
We don't really, although I do sometimes wonder, could mind body actually cause actual nodules at some point?
Totally. Totally.
I think that it can, because, you know, it can do other autoimmune things. So I understand the question. I think, though, I would just want to encourage you that to think about it as that fragile sets doubt up for a pretty nice perch where it can stay. I want to help you however we would do it, because ultimately you've got to find your way towards it.
Right.
We have to get you to a place where you do not see your voice as fragile. I don't see my voice as fragile. I see it as like one of the strongest parts of me that is like pretty indestructible, because I can sing with power.
Yeah.
And it doesn't do a thing.
Okay.
What about you? In your singing, do you find that now, or did you find that at other points?
I think I have a lot more, I have a lot more, not fear of, well, no. So now when I sing, I definitely think about like preserving my voice. So when I do, cause I do a lot of like gospel, like very belty type of stuff. So mm-hmm. I definitely am always thinking like, well, you know, I shouldn't push too hard here yet, cause I'm going to have to be doing this. So I definitely treat myself as like, I only have this much to give. So I better wait for, you know, the right moment to give it.
Yeah. Now that's an interesting, I feel like there's, lots of different aspects to it. On the one hand, you're thinking with care towards your voice, and that's just mm-hmm. like loving your voice.
Yeah.
Being careful about it. And I don't mean careful like, uh-oh, it's fragile, mm-hmm. but just being loving towards it. Mm-hmm. So there's that aspect. But I do think that there's some part where you haven't yet determined how fragile is it.
Right.
And it's a question that has to be asked. Mm-hmm. You know, in the doubt mm-hmm. column, think about it. That question mm-hmm. is looming large.
Yeah.
You've yeah. got to get that settled one way or another. I don't know exactly what it's going to take, but I know that's the question.
Right.
And that's one of the reasons the doubt column is helpful. It at least mm-hmm. identifies the question that needs answering.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, that's good. I definitely think, and I mean, yeah, we can hit the power column for a little bit. I know that when I am feeling like I have to prove myself, like I never got like an audition that I auditioned for, any of that kind of stuff. So very much like if I have to prove to people that I can sing, whatever, my pain is intensified and then I hate the whole yeah. experience anyways. So there's a lot of that tied to it for sure.
So a power column action step, as I call it, the yeah. thing that you're going to do about how you're thinking. Mm-hmm. Would be, I'm not saying you can just instantly do this, but I think yeah. it would be worth your considering.
Yeah.
You might say to yourself, this could make you uncomfortable. It can happen in the power column, but I'm going to say it anyway.
Do it.
You could end up saying something to yourself, at least in a fake it till you make it kind of way, mm-hmm. where you could say, there's actually something special about me just as a person because mm-hmm. I'm unique. Mm-hmm. And no one can sing something the way I can. Mm-hmm. You probably have said things like that to yourself in certain ways, but maybe mm-hmm. you don't apply it at all moments.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Here's a good example that you can probably relate to in some way. Mm-hmm. Do you write songs?
Yeah.
Okay. So I write songs also, mm-hmm. but I could not figure out how to write a song at all until about 3 years ago. Just could not do it. Uh-huh. I would sit down and I'd try to write it. And what I found is the reason I couldn't do it is really that I was trying to prove it to someone else instead of just to do it because I wanted to.
100%. Yeah.
And when I was trying to prove it, I would start by writing out these lyrics and then I would try to put it to music and I'd be like, this doesn't feel right. Mm-hmm. Well, My process isn't that way at all. I now yeah. start off with a chord structure that I'm kind of mm-hmm. liking, and then a melody mm-hmm. kind of comes to me, and then and the lyrics usually like they're just coming out of me. I don't even know. Like people are like, "What's the song about?" I'm like, "I don't know." Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes I know,
yeah.
but
yeah, yeah.
That all comes from the fact that I decided to be me, mm-hmm. and really, that's what the power column is about. Mm. I'm sure you've decided to be you in large measure in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. But usually in the power column, we are hiding from ourselves in certain ways. We are locking off yeah. certain parts of ourselves. Mm. We don't think we're good enough.
Right.
But you are.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I definitely think I tend to think more about like what others are thinking of me in that moment rather than what I'm thinking of myself. And I
That's
know you
right.
say like okay. in the power column, you talk about like how we feel about ourselves, how we feel about others. And I think the how I feel about myself is definitely a place of contention for probably most of us.
Well, it is for everybody, yeah. but it doesn't have to stay that way. Mm-hmm. You know, like I used to not have a great relationship with myself. Mm. I wouldn't even say it's perfect now, but I have a much better relationship with myself than I did certainly when I was having the back pain. Mm-hmm. But even in the last, I don't know, 4 or 5 years
yeah.
and increasingly even in the last like 2 years or 3 years.
Mm, wow.
I keep growing in my relationship with me, and that's the power column is a way to really see yourself very clearly. Mm-hmm. You know, that core suffering self that you get to in the core narrative, you really yeah. It's like I learned to empathize with myself. I don't think I empathized with myself at all for over 40 years.
Well, yeah.
It's only recently.
Do you consider any of this similar to like self-compassion? Because I feel like that's a very big term in like the mind-body world.
I do, and I don't know a ton about how other people think about self-compassion, but I will tell you that my perception of how self-compassion is thought about feels to me like most people end up just trying to will themselves to have that, but they don't actually believe it. And what I like in the power column is it teaches you about you so that you can actually have compassion for yourself. You don't have to try. You just actually have it because you're like, whoa, I've been through a lot.
Yeah. Oh, that's really good. That is really good.
Maybe the power column's not as bad as you thought.
Maybe it's not as bad. Maybe it's not as bad as
not
I
as
thought.
Not as hard as you thought. I didn't think you thought it was bad.
Yeah, no, for sure. No, this is so good. I so appreciate you. What is there anything that you would just want to leave people with of like just a nugget of maybe someone who's even just beginning thinking about the mind-body world or beginning of thinking maybe to check out your work? Like just anything you might think of.
I guess one thing that I would say is that, I mean, I think the mind-body field is full of just wonderful, great people with lots of great ideas. Yeah. And each one of them can help some people, for sure. One of the reasons I like my system is I tried to design a system that could help everybody. And that wasn't just me being a goodist or a perfectionist. It was because I needed it to make full sense. And so I guess I would encourage people, certainly I do encourage people to check out my work, but one of the reasons that I encourage them to check out my work is it is a comprehensive way of understanding each and everything that you experience in your mind-body experience. And it not only can help you reduce, it can help break up your supposedly chronic symptoms so that you get some movement and you have full hope that you can get better. It can help you control those acute symptoms. But it also can help you in the power column where you get to live your best, fullest life. So whenever, even with you, Whitney, when I hear you shying away from the power column a little bit, I totally understand. But I'll tell you, I want that for you. And you deserve it.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
Amazing. Well, thank you. I'll link everything. To that you have to offer in the show notes and make sure that everyone has a chance to check you out. Thank you so much for this.
Yeah, thank you, Whitney. This was great. You know, let's do some things again. It sounded like you are potentially interested in training down the line, so I'll keep you posted for those things.
Yeah, absolutely.
But you know, if you want to collaborate in some way, but I really think try to poke, you know, poke around in that power column. And you can even ask me questions because I think you'd get a lot out of it.
Yeah.
Especially a singer. Oh my God. You're going to be great.
Yes. Appreciate it.
This was great, Whitney. Thank you so much.
Like what you hear so far? Click the subscribe button and give me a rating and review. And let's keep this conversation going. You can find me on social media at Whitney Wood Music. You can find any of my latest singles out anywhere that you stream or purchase music under Whitney Wood, as well as my latest passion project. It's a kids EP called BB and Bubba. I'll have the links below so you can find them. Have a great week, everybody.